Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking industry podcast where folks who build networks for a living gather in the virtual conference room to exchange opinions, talk technology, and chat with excellent industry guests. Today, we have one such guest in the form of Gigamon, who is sponsoring the podcast today to share with us about their traffic visibility products. I am Ethan Banks, network engineer, CCIE, and blogger up at packetpushers.net. You can follow me on Twitter at EC Banks and share with me on Google Plus via Ethan Banks. Mr. Greg Farrell was with us as always. And Greg, sir, how are you doing this week?
Well, I'm getting back together. My health's starting to look up, and hopefully I can start getting back to full-time getting things done. It's been a difficult kind of week. I started a new job this week, which is interesting. It's a nice light project focusing on rebuilding firewalls, which is nice, fun, hands-on. You remember I was saying I wanted to do some more hands-on work recently?
Yes, indeed.
I'm going to get that in spades.
Yeah.
Be careful what you wish for.
the whole sickness thing, I sympathize with you on that, in that yeah. I have been sick and all the rest of my family seems to have been sick, but it's now sweeping past and I'm with you. I'm getting back to normal and trying to wrap up my busy year of projects and so on as the year is coming rapidly to a close with deadlines looming and then yet more to start up on in 2012. Yeah. Well, guys from Gigamon, thanks a lot for joining us. Paul Hooper is with us. Paul, why don't you introduce yourself to the Packet Pushers audience and tell everybody what you do at Gigamon.
Thank you guys for the opportunity. My name is Paul Hooper and I run marketing, but don't let that fool you. I'm actually an okay guy. I used to be a CIO and had IT jobs in many organizations before joining Gigamon. So here at Gigamon, we provide a focus around traffic visibility. So as traffic's moving across a multitude of different networks, we provide technologies that insightfully give visibility into that traffic to make sure you can manage, monitor, and secure those networks wherever they may be across the enterprise.
Got it. Now, you brought with you for moral support Lance Gallardo also. Lance, why don't you introduce yourself and tell folks what you do there at Gigamon?
My name is Lance Gallardo, or Gallardo, the director of sales engineering for Gigamon. Sales engineers in North America report to me. And so we support all the sales reps in the world.
It's the truth police.
That's correct. You're right.
Paul, why don't you give us a quick, just kind of give us an overview of Gigamon. I mean, I know you guys presented to the NetField Day folks that came through your offices back in October, and a lot of the folks there hadn't even heard of Gigamon, weren't too familiar. So why don't you just set some quick groundwork about Gigamon as a company?
Yeah, so that's a very, very insightful comment. A lot of people haven't heard the name before, but after we describe what we do, there's a lot of people that seem to associate with the issue and how we address the issue. So very brief background. We're a mid-stage startup. We're based here in Northern California, a place called Milpitas. Been founded back in 2000, early 2000s, and have been now going for 10, 11 plus years. But we focus technology on helping customers gain insight into the traffic that's flowing across the network. So whether it be voice traffic, data traffic, whether it be storage, whatever the traffic may be, we provide a fabric that intelligently makes sure that traffic gets to the right management tool at the right point in time.
When we met you at TechField Day, and we got a presentation, and people should, if you are interested, go and flip to the video, which is also a great presentation. I heard you throw out a line of what the span port always wanted to be. What is that? Now, to me, span ports, there's just never enough of them on a chassis because the silicon inside a switch just can't have dozens of span ports available to replicate data to. How does that, when you say what your span port always wanted to be, what do you mean by that?
Networking has evolved over the course of the last few years. Networks have got basically screaming fast and flatter and flatter. Whoever you speak to in the network industry today, they're going to talk to you about fabrics and they're going to talk to you about 40 gig or maybe even 100 gig or maybe even terabit or whatever else. They're all going faster and faster. And the poor little span port, which is the guy that was designed back in the 90s, is still the same span port it's always been. It's never been evolved. So as there's more and more traffic passing through these switches and through Ethernet, the span port is still the span port that it always was. So what we looked at is there's got to be a different way. There's got to be a better way of doing this. So we connect into that span port, and we take all the traffic out of that span port, and then we intelligently flow that traffic. So depending upon what you want to do with the traffic, we'll make sure it gets to the right tool, to the right management interface, to the right application performance management, the network performance management, the analytics, the recording device, whatever it is, we'll make sure it gets to that right device from the SPAN port. So the SPAN that never evolved beyond the dumb Ethernet port that it was, you know, in the 1990s, we see ourselves taking it to what it really should be and what it needs to be.
So what you're saying is I could take a, just to try and cap this off as a very quick introduction, I've normally got a SPAN port and I normally say SPAN this set of data. What you can do with your equipment is you're saying attach that SPAN port to our device and then we'll fan it out into dozens of ports. And down one, we will send what it, and then we'll give you a set of rules that you give you an interface that allows you to say, pick up all the IP packets for this subnet and send them over there, and then take all the MPLS frames and send them over there, and pick up this and send it, and then you can crack the SPAN port into dozens of different subspans, if you like, or something like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In addition to all of that kind of logic, we would say, okay, if you go through, if you find a social security number somewhere in there, mask it out. Or if it's just sending, if the SPAN is supposed to be sending to a top talker analysis tool, which only needs to and from IP and, you know, IP source, IP dest, then chop the payload off and just send the IP source, IP dest into the packet and just truncate the packet. You can do a lot of logical kind of transformation of the packet if you so desire. You can duplicate it or you can dedupe it if you see it through multiple SPAN ports. We can take that out and we can say, I've already seen that packet. You don't need to send that same packet on again. So we'll dedupe the packet in that point.
So really sophisticated packet munging. Well, frame munging. I mean, you're actually saying you take a span, you take a feed from somewhere, one in, multiple ins, I guess. You can do multiple inputs?
We can do multiple inputs spread across multiple data centers, multiple racks, multiple wiring closets, whatever it is. You can take multiple inputs and then send that all of that multiple inputs into either one tool or multiple tools, or you can take one input and do it into multiple outputs. So think of it as being an any to any or a one to any or an any to one. We can do that kind of logic.
So that's where the what the SPAN port always wanted to be comes from.
Bingo.
Yeah, I kind of get that. There's, especially for larger shops, there's going to be a need to have a device that can push traffic from all different parts of the data center, sites that have multiple cores or multiple segments that are physically apart from one another, and be able to push that into all different kinds of tools. So a tool set that would be commonly hanging off of this would be something like maybe a fancy packet capture analysis tool, maybe an IPS, other kind of tools there. So you're really feeding into a market where you've got a lot of inputs of data that you want to analyze and push it out. But this isn't a transit device. A Gigamon box is not something you push traffic through, if you will, right? You're just sending copies of data elsewhere.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we're not in line of production. Your production network keeps running. We just take replicas off the SPAN port or off taps or off mirrors, whatever you have. We'll just take a copy of the data. So your production network keeps going. Let me give you a very tangible example. One of the things that quite a few customers tell us we're good for. You've got a big data center and you've got a couple of sniffers that you tactically plug in when you need to respond to some event, some outage, some issue, some whatever. So someone runs into the data center, they plug a sniffer into a port and they capture a set of packets and they come back to their desk and they do some analysis. With our fabric, the way we see that going is you can leave your sniffer permanently located somewhere inside the data center, doesn't matter where. You connect that to any one of our fabric switches. And then from that point, any egress point, you can say, I want to take traffic from this VLAN or this port or this rack or this whatever, this subnet. But you take that traffic, you map it through and send it into that sniffer dynamically without ever leaving your chair. And you do it for 30 seconds, then you turn it off because the sniffer's now caught the information it needs. It's really giving you that kind of very dynamic and very flexible traffic capture ability.
So physically then, what would be that Gigamon box that's going to allow me to stay seated in my comfortable chair? Is it like a one-use system? Is it a big chassis? What would it be?
We have a range of physical devices. We have a 1U device that can range from 8 1-gig ports to 2 10-gig ports, or a configurable chassis, 1RU, anywhere from 20 1-gig ports to 4 10-gig ports. Then we get into the 10-gig realm. We have a 2U chassis that can support up to 24 10-gig ports, whether they're input or output ports or ingress or egress ports, and then 4 1-gig ports. And then we have our large chassis, our HDA chassis, which can support a maximum of 96 10-gig ports or 352 1-gig ports or any combination in between. And again, these are configurable ports. They can either be ingress or egress ports. We can also stack GigaView chassis together via the 10-gig ports that will allow you to build a cluster of up to 30 GigaView devices. So you're not confined to just the port density of one chassis. You can stack chassis together to build your port count out.
So you can really build this thing to support as big a data center environment as you're likely ever to need. I mean, so when you stack them, does it become like one logical device you're managing, or can you just push feeds from one chassis into another?
Both. You can actually create one logical cluster and manage that via one virtual IP address. And when I say that is you create a master-slave cluster, and then everyone logs into the master and they can manage the system or the cluster via that one pane of glass. The other option that we give, again, because stacking and clustering is very flexible within GigaView chassis, you can cascade the data back to another device. So you can have standalone devices just cascading packets back and forth as well.
So once I'm in there and I'm managing my GigaView architecture, or my Gigamon, you know, fabric architecture, if you will, I know you guys have the GigaView software that you use to manage this product. Kind of walk me through the process of what I'm doing to manipulate these data streams I'm taking in from all over my data center. How do I go about getting all of this traffic chopped up and sent to where I need it to go?
As Paul mentioned in the beginning here, our source of the data is either via a SPAN port or SPAN ports or taps. So that's the source that comes into GigaView. And then from there, you have features that can either combine all of those sources or part of those sources. And then you apply what we call filter rules to those. And those filter rules are based on the IP header. Any attribute in the IP header layer 2, 3, 4, the users can build a rule. An example is, I want to allow VLAN tag 500 packets to a tool port that I designate as tool port 1. And then, of course, to that tool port could be attached as a sniffer. And then you can also take a look at and say, I want TCP port 80 traffic to only go to port 2 of that tool, of my tool port designation. And that tool would be attached to either an IDS or a web firewall or whatever, what have you. So that's how you kind of break down and really slice up the traffic that is coming into GigaView.
I mean, one of the challenges that I run into when you try to do this with a SPAN port, if you do it, you know, try to do all of that munging that you just described within the switch, you're going to lose stuff. Either you got oversubscription where you're trying to pump too much data from too many ports or VLANs into this one SPAN port, and so there's just an overflow. The SPAN port can only handle so much. Or the other way around, you might be filtering off stuff so you have a small enough data stream to cope with, but then you're losing stuff you need.
That's correct. A lot of the engineers that I speak to that have experience with SPAN ports, you know, they're spanning trunk ports and they're looking for specific information. In this case, it could be VLAN traffic. And then they want to send that out or mirror that and send that out the mirror port. Well, as you start building your trunk port pipes, you know, you could go ether channel, right, and build a 10, 20, 30, 40 gig pipe. You're looking at a lot of data coming back and forth between that link. And eventually you're going to oversubscribe that SPAN port. Now the engineer is saying, what do I do now? How do I see and gain visibility to all of this traffic?
So indirectly, if I just read between the lines there, you're saying you could take a 10 gig SPAN port and then break it down into multiple 1 gig ports to feed off to devices?
That's correct. We can slice that traffic off based on any attribute or sets of attributes in the IP header. So if the packet meets the criteria of my IP address in my rule set, my TCP port, I can actually redirect that to a specific GigaView tool port. Or I can just say, hey, I'm looking only for this IP address and send that to tool port number 3. So yes, you have a lot of flexibility within the filter creation process in GigaView to slice that traffic up and send it to specific tool ports.
And that's one of our big value propositions, because a lot of customers come to us and say, you know, I went out and bought tools when I was running a gig network or a multiple gig network. Now I'm moving to 10 gig. I may be moving to N by 10, maybe 40 gig backbones. The tool that I bought is, you know, gigabit only, and I can either upgrade that to a 10 gigabit device, which is going to cost a lot of money, and many of these tools, although they may have 10 gig interfaces, won't actually keep up with 10 gig of traffic. Or you can put us in the middle and have us do intelligent filtering to make sure exactly the right traffic gets that tool and you don't flood the tool, and you can intelligently tune it, basically extend the life of that tool far beyond that you'd normally would have available to you.
The other use case which I can imagine, which is something I could have used a little while ago, is you might want to upgrade to a 10 gig port because you want the speed, you want the lower latency of a 10 gig. But you're really only going to get 2 gigs of data on there. So now you've got a 10 gig port. You don't want to have to buy a 10 gig appliance because you're actually not trying to monitor at 10 gigs. You just need 2 gigs. You've got a 1 gig, so you break it up into two by one. You get two appliances running at 1 gig, and you're in business. You can do your IDS there. Now, there's just got to be one problem there is flows, because if you're talking about doing an IDS or a web firewall, you know, proxy functionalities, or you're trying to do capture a packet flow for analysis, you're going to have to follow a flow, a whole IP flow. So that means not only are you going to be able to have to map at packet level, but do you map the flows as well?
Absolutely. So we have a feature within GigaView called GigaStream. Similar concept to ether channeling, but we bundle a set of tool ports, anywhere up to 8 tool ports. We define that as a GigaStream bundle, and then what we do is we can aggregate data from the input side, send that information, whether we filter specific packets out or we send everything to it. Let's say we send everything to it. Now this GigaStream tool bundle, we apply a hash algorithm, a four-tuple hash algorithm based on IP source, IP destination, TCP source, TCP destination. That's our default. And then what we do is we'll load share or load balance that traffic across the links within that bundle. And we keep the TCP flow intact based on that hash going down a specific link.
So you'll be able to say once a flow is destined to a given destination, you'll continue to lock that flow until it's completed so that you can inspect an entire session.
That's correct. So the tool now on the back end doesn't have to figure out how to rebuild that TCP session or how to grab some packets from another neighboring tool.
Yeah, you don't have to put the flows back together somewhere in the back engine. You don't have to put them into a SQL database and then correlate them all.
Correct. That's a huge relief on the monitoring tools.
If you're starting to now talk about layer 2, 3, 4 engine matching and distribution of load or redirection, you've also then got to be able to match. And you talked earlier about the language. How sophisticated can the rule matching be?
The rule matching can be based on any attribute within the IP header. It could be a single attribute or it could be multiple attributes in the IP header. You know, IP source and TCP, or it could be MAC address, CRC, header CRC. It could be a number of things.
Okay, and can you nest those? Can you nest the rules in terms of, it's not just a simple saying, you know, this goes this way and I'm done. Can you hierarchically load them?
Yes. When you say nesting, we can support up to 4,000 rules within the system. And then these 4,000 rules can be defined to redirect the traffic wherever the user wants them to be routed.
And the advantage to that rule, but going back to the previous point about being out of band, is you can change those rules and you're not going to be affecting the production flow of traffic. So you're not locked into maintenance windows before you can touch that system. You can change those reasonably dynamically. All you're affecting is the flow of traffic to the tool based upon those rules, but you're not changing anything that's going on in production.
You're not in line like a spam port again. Theoretically, if you're changing the spam port, you're changing your live configuration and you need to take an at-risk change and stuff like that. Now, let's imagine now that I've got obviously 1 gigamon, I can feed data in, it's going to go through the switching fabric in the core of the gigamon and start to fan out to the multiple ports. But what happens when you start to get beyond one chassis? Can we get to multiple chassis?
Sure. We have a couple of features that allow that to happen. One is crossbox. So you can crossbox connect ports. In other words, I have in GigaView number one, I have my input ports coming in from my span port feeds, and then I want to send that across to GigaView number two that has a sniffer attached to it. I can stack the two devices together, and in one simple rule, I can take input from port one on GigaView number one, send that across stack, and then output that to my tool port connected to my sniffer on GigaView number two. It's as simple as that.
Almost like a switching backplane. You route the data internally. So more than one chassis, stack it together, and then all of your ports become visible to each other.
That's correct.
I mean, it's a bit more complicated than that, but conceptually, that would be for somebody like me, that would be how I could visualize it and I'd be running.
That's correct. Now we can do a straight connection like that. And of course you can create filters or apply filters on the egress port or the ingress port. You can also create what we call a crossbox flow map that will do essentially the same thing. Take a set of input ports, run that through this flow map that it really is considered a container of map rules. And then in these map rules, you decide which port you want to output those to. And they could be anywhere within the GigaView cluster. It could be on the local device or it could be crossbox on another device.
And so the other point of clarification here is we've talked about input and output from the GigaView. That's not hard and fast. When you pick up and you install your first Gigamon device, the first thing you do when you go in and configure it is you tell it what's input port, what's output port. So either port can be configured as either, so to speak. Mm. So you can have one box, 24 ports of it, where you can have 23 ingress and only one tool attached, or you can have the complete reverse should you decide to do that. It's very versatile, very flexible. There's no limit on where you ingress and where you egress.
Just to restate that, what you're also saying is you could actually have multiple 1 gig imports and funnel it out to 110 gig out.
Correct. You can do that.
So just turning around the use case, we talked earlier about having 10 gig in, 1 gig out, but you could turn it around the other way, of course.
Absolutely.
If you had a 10 gig IDS and you wanted to had multiple 1 gig internet connections come in, you want to scan them all. It's a bit of an odd use case. I bet you it's not common, but it might.
We do have customers thinking about that.
They must be odd. That sounds so odd, but I could see how it might work. Let's say you want to scan 8 gigabits of traffic and you would have to have 8 by 1 gig IDSs or have one 10 gig IDS. It might be more efficient to have, especially in terms of power consumed, to have one IDS.
Yeah, if you think about it from a wiring closet, take it out to the enterprise edge and out of the data center, pretty low performance wiring closets, and you can have only a gigabit stream of traffic that could be the sum of the complete traffic going through that closet. Hmm. And you may feed, though, you know, you may have one centralized IPS that you want where 10 gig feed in, and you could feed 10 wiring closets into one IPS that you'd never physically be able to do any other way apart from through a visibility fabric.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. So speaking of weird use cases or use cases as a whole, what are some of the normal deployments looking like? So if we went out to some of your typical customers, what sort of, how are they using it? Single systems, multiple systems? I mean, use cases.
Typical use case today, as we see with customers, is they'll take one section of their network, whether it be the edge or the core, most likely the core, and they'll take span ports. You know, it's a handful of span ports, anywhere from 4 to 8 span ports. They'll bring those in the GigaView, and that could consume one device, right? Whether it's a 1 gig link, span port link, or a 10 gig span port link, that'll come into GigaView. And then they'll use the filtering aggregation features, send that information out to their IDSs or their sniffers. They'll kind of get their feet wet. And once they get comfortable, we see customers coming back and buying more and more because now they're going to roll it out to multiple data centers or multiple regional sites. We start seeing stacking configuration questions, crossbox mapping, crossbox connects configurations. So that's kind of how the progression goes with the use of our systems. Now, you know, I mentioned span ports, but as we talked earlier, the span ports tend to get overrun as the traffic within the network starts to grow. And within every network, traffic grows at a periodic state. Customers are now considering moving away from span ports and looking at tapping their links now so they see the entire data, bringing it into GigaView and seeing the value of aggregation and filtering to filter that data down and distributing that to their tools.
Gigamon, you guys have a line of taps. One of the things I think of when I think of network taps is, oh, I just stuck something in line, and if it loses power, it's a point of failure. I believe you guys would say that's not the case, right?
So on the optical side, we have a whole range of external optical taps, which are completely passive. When I say passive is we basically split the light. In some sense, with one of our products, 70% of the light continues down to the downstream switch or network node. 30% goes down into GigaView. So there's no power applied to this tap device. On the copper side, we have a copper tap we call the GTAP ATX. It provides three sources of power. Traditional power brick. We also support power over Ethernet. And then we have a two-hour battery backup. So again, if you lose power brick power to it, Ethernet, power of Ethernet is available. And if power over Ethernet is not available, then we drop back to the battery backup. So now that keeps the link always on. So now the two end nodes don't have to go through PHY renegotiation or link renegotiation process.
In this deployment scenario that we were just talking about a little earlier, where you've got like an early deployment scenario, a customer brings in feeds from, you know, 4, 8, 10 different spots in their data center, feeds it into the GigaView, does their filtering, et cetera, to the different tools that they're using. How hard is that to actually get going? And in the context that I'm asking is this, it's one thing for a network engineer to sit down, get this chassis up off the ground, working and moving data around where he wants it to go. What about for more of a frontline guy that's like in the NOC, let's say, who needs to get a data stream configured for a problem that he's troubleshooting for a customer? What's the interface like and how does that work for these guys?
So we do support CLI through Telnet or through SSH, but we also have a web GUI interface that can be accessed through your typical browser. You just strictly browse or straight browse into the device itself, the IP address, via your web browser. You log in, and what comes up is you've got, if you can imagine this, on one screen, you've got your network ports or your ingress ports on one side, your egress ports on another side. And what you simply do to start connecting and sending data from ingress to egress is a click and drag and draw a line from your ingress port to your egress port.
And then the next logical question from that is, once you've joined your ingress and your egress ports so that your traffic flows are headed in the direction that the user needs them to go, what about applying writing and then applying filters to those lines?
So you can apply directly at the ingress ports. You can apply the filters that you create. The beauty about applying filters is we allow you to create a database of filters. So you can apply the same filter and reuse that across any number of egress ports or ingress ports. So you don't have to painstakingly go to each port and then recreate that same filter rule. You can just pull it from the database. But it's as easy as just picking it out, applying it to the port, whether it be an ingress or an egress port.
So then the NOC guy, he could write his own filter, or he could just pull from an existing list and apply that to whatever link he needs. And it sounds like it would be a very straightforward thing for him.
Pretty much. We always use the comment of click, drag, and draw.
Oh, nice graphical interface makes it easy to see where you're going. But you've got the CLI underneath to make you to get the hands-on to feel exactly what's happening.
Exactly. And the CLI and the web interface, they work in tandem. So any commands you apply to the CLI of a GigaView unit, you can immediately see the results of that command being applied on the CLI in the web interface and vice versa.
Okay.
So you've got a customer now who's really, you know, committed to the GigaMon infrastructure. They like it and they want it to grow a bit bigger. What would they do to say they got a pretty substantial data center infrastructure? How do they grow GigaMon into that data center?
So a lot of customers that I'm talking to now, they're looking at redesigning their data centers, building out their new data centers, and looking at new data center architectures. A lot of them now are looking at pods, building data center pods within a data center. And how do you not only manage that, but manage and gain traffic visibility to these different pods. So what they're looking at now and considering and getting a lot of advice from the GigaView SEs is how do I do that? A lot of them now are looking at building and specking in a end of GigaView in the end of each row, and then either bringing tap data or span data into that end of row, and then sending that off to a centralized, could be an HD device that is housing and connecting all of the monitoring tools. So that's kind of how the progression and the architecture of the monitoring solution is looking at today.
So if I'm a customer that's interested in maybe doing an eval of Gigamon, how do you guys, what's your sales channel like? Do you guys work with VARs? Is it direct? What's the model?
We are 100% channel. We do have support teams. We have account teams, Gigamon badged account teams that work with each of these VARs. And so the VARs will actually come to the account teams and request an evaluation unit. And then we will work with the VAR and the customer through this evaluation or proof of concept to make sure that they're successful.
But if you can't find, or if your local reseller doesn't carry Gigamon, or you can't find someone, come to our website. There's numerous points you can click on saying, send me more information. Someone will call you. We'll make sure someone comes and gives you the information and the details you need.
Just one more question I got to ask, which is why the name Gigamon?
Because Pokemon was taken. No. sorry, I got to say it because everyone comes up with that joke at us. Gigamon, gigabit monitoring. And when the company was founded in 2004, gigabit was on the horizon, really. And now we're shipping products that are now terabit. So it should be Terramon, but you don't want to change the name of a company. So that's where it comes from.
Well, on that, we'll wrap up the show this week. Thanks for listening, everyone. You can follow the Packet Pushers on Twitter at Packet Pushers. Visit packetpushers.net to read blogs by the growing Packet Pushers blogging community. Subscribe to our RSS feeds. And if you like, donate to the show. Email your comments or questions about this sponsored podcast to packetpushers@gmail.com. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.